This is episode number 772 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today on What's New, we're going to talk a bit about Free Comic Book Day, the return of Warlock 5, Archie publishing Marvel, and more. Our comics this week will be Suicide Squad, The Banana Splits crossover, Inhumans Prime number 1, and Riverdale number 1. And this week's Out of the Long Box is Extermination number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, and thank you for starting a trend at work for me, by the way, because there's a lot of folks that listen to the show.
Really?
So usually when people come up, my friend Jim and a couple other guys will come up and say, "You look lovely today," because they remember you talking about how you have to start every conversation flattering me.
Yes.
So then I get in the mode and desire and mood to be nice.
And then do they hit you with the criticism?
Usually that wait. That's that's usually about 15, 20 minutes.
Here's
later.
The beauty of this show. It's all just it's love.
That's
it's all positivity here. You don't have to worry about that. There's no I don't have the hammer in the other hand.
No.
It's just all platitudes coming at you. Lots to talk about this week, Matthew, and some good comics to talk about as well. I wanted to start by saying where we will be on Free Comic Book Day, because for me on Free Comic Book Day, as you listen to this, which I believe is the upcoming weekend, I will be at the Forest Park branch of the Springfield City Library doing a Free Comic Book Day event there. You will be at a show.
Yes, I'll be in Poughkeepsie, New York at the second annual Hudson Valley Comic Con.
Which I just love the sound of that.
It is so much fun. And you and I have been to Poughkeepsie when we went to the
chance
to go see Striper.
Yes.
And Poughkeepsie is such an amazing little place. And people always talk about sort of the downside of it, where you've got the downtown area. But where they do the show is just a really cool place. It's at a Gold's Gym. And I just got the floor plan, so it looks like we're all on the soccer field.
I like to think of Poughkeepsie as the Leominster of New York.
It pretty much is. It pretty much is. It could
be. It's like the twin city there. So that'll be fun. I don't even know what the big Free Comic Book Day books are this year.
No, I usually there's some event that DC or Marvel will put out or to kickstart something.
Sure.
But right now, all their events are kind of in full swing. So
we're going to talk about some interesting stuff, Matthew, because there's been a lot of news coming out lately about Marvel and about some of the stuff that they're doing. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about a comic that you and I were talking about off the air. I will be interviewing, hopefully for the next episode of the show, an artist by the name of Jeffrey Edwards, who was the artist on our Out of the Long Box book today, which we'll talk about in a bit. But there is a book called Warlock 5, which for some of our sci-fi fans out there, they may have collected this book in the mid-80s. It was a book that was put out by Aircell, and it was, I'm going to read you the description of the book, but it is a book that is being brought back by our friends at Ragnarok Publications, and they're going to be doing a Kickstarter starting on the 25th of April to bring this book back and sort of add a new chapter to this series that ran for, I believe, 22 issues for its main series and then an additional 7, 8, 9 books afterwards. I'll let you know for sure because I just ordered the set on eBay.
Very good.
After I declared I'm not buying any more print comics, but we talked about that
off air too.
So I had written a thing for the Secret Identity website, but Ragnarok Publications is bringing back Warlock 5, and how they describe the series is it says, five touchstone realities exist at focal points along the grid. From each of these realities, a warlock is chosen to act as one of the five guardians. Savastar, a shape-shifting dragon-like being, Dumador, a warlord for the Dark Ages, Argon, an advanced cybernetic organism from a techno-hell, Tanith, the ageless sorceress, and Zanya, a power-mad machine gun necromancer. All of those characters sound awesome, by the way. It says, together, the warlocks protect the grid, thereby protecting all of space and time. They are the last line of defense against the awful forces of chaos that lurk in the darkness outside the grid. There's only one problem. They hate each other. So there will be a Kickstarter for Warlock 5. Warlock 5 is going to be written by Cullen Bunn and Jimmy Johnston, with art by the aforementioned Jeffrey Edwards and colors by Andy Poole. So I'm excited about this because when I went and looked at the old series, Aircel is no longer around.
Nope.
And so although I learned that I had a few comics of theirs, which I'm going to have to dig out for a future Out of the Long Box, but they did a series called The Adventurers. And I picked up a couple of those in a, I don't know, 25-cent bin when we were at one of the shows because it had like a D&D flavor to me. So when you look at these, though, the some of the covers for this Warlock 5 series were like these beautifully painted covers. And the cover for the first issue is like little, almost like slice-style panels with a picture of each one of the five guardians on it. And it looks freaking awesome. And so I, in getting excited for this series, was like, well, maybe I'll see if I could track down those issues. So I tracked down a complete run of the first series and ended up buying it on eBay. And again, after I declared that I was not buying any more print comics, this was the week where I sort of hated myself for purchases that I've made, because some of the books that we're going to talk about in this episode and the next are books that I, under my declaration, would not have bought.
And I can just picture you looking at the computer going, oh, I hate you. Buy it now. Oh, I hate you.
At first I was like, oh, I wonder about this series. Oh, it was only this many issues. Interesting. Wow, those covers are really interesting as well. And I really like the subject matter. Well, that seems like a reasonable price. Click. Yeah. Done.
Just it's done. That easy.
It's too easy. I just realized that when I say that I'm getting out of collecting print comics, what's likely going to happen is I'm going to purge a lot of the mid-2000s to now stuff that is not that great, and probably end up backfilling my entire collection with runs of old books where I can now buy the complete run on eBay. Anything that I can get the complete run of, you almost have me purchasing just because you have the complete run.
That was the issue and problem when we went to Main Vein and Greenfield.
Absolutely, dude.
You walked in and said, oh my God, they have full sets of everything.
I must have bought like 70 Silver Surfer comics. Yeah. I've read like three of them. Yep. I must have bought like 70 of them. Yes, complete runs of every. I bought like a Man-Thing run. I bought all this kind of crazy stuff. So yeah, that's where you get me.
Yeah.
You show me a complete run of something for a reasonable price and hard-pressed for me not to buy that.
And I'm the same way. I've been buying stuff at our local shop that has been putting out a lot of 50-cent books. And
yep.
I'm flipping through going, hey, I really don't need any of these, but there's six of them. I'm going to get them.
Right. There's a six-issue miniseries, and I can get them all at 50 cents a piece. Bought.
Do I really need Rogue Trooper number 20 to 39?
No.
No, but I now have
them. You have it. And now you need to fill in the other sides of that collection. That's the problem. It's like, oh, I have seven issues and the whole thing was 30 issues. Now I need to track down the other 23.
Yep.
Yep. So anyways, I'm excited about that. You will see more about the upcoming Kickstarter, and you will probably be hearing from Jeffrey sometime in the near future about that series, hopefully in our next episode.
Yes.
Now, moving on to some of the stuff that I mentioned about Marvel before. Because at the, I believe it was at the big Star Wars celebration that I know our friend Wayne went to, because he was posting about it on Facebook, and I'm sure some of our other listeners went to. I know he was saying that it was a bit of a disaster in terms of how it was being run.
It was interesting because I was following him as well as six or seven other friends.
Oh, okay.
And you were getting a lot of different points of view from different things. So it is sad, and I know how much Wayne is a huge Star Wars fan.
I mean, it sounds like it got better as the week went on, but we're seeing, not just from this show, but from a lot of shows, we are seeing reports of, I don't know what it is, man. And you've been to shows over the past couple of years that are, I don't want to say they're not well run, but it seems like the amount of people almost catches them by surprise.
Yeah.
You know, or the amount of people who have, but again, people are buying tickets ahead of time for these VIP events, for these signings and these meet and greets and things like that. And then come to find out, they have pretty much oversold it, so that the amount of time that they have the star there signing for a block of an hour or 2 hours or whatever, they have too many people who bought tickets for it. They're shuffling people through like it's an assembly line, and there's people who are left without the experience that they paid for.
Yeah.
And all of those things are bad. So, you know, again, the sort of overbooking stuff up front and then hoping it'll all come together at the last minute, we are seeing time and time again that stuff falls apart.
Yeah, and it does not come together.
It doesn't
come
together.
When you see something that's, when you have advanced ticket sales and says 20,000 people, plan for having 30,000 people there. Don't just plan on having 10.
If Matt Herring is signing copies of his Doctor Who book for an hour.
Yes.
and I am selling tickets to that, I have to do the math and think about how many books that Matt can sign in an hour.
Yep.
And if I'm giving everybody a minute of my time, 2 minutes of my time, well, if you give everybody 2 minutes of your time, then that's 30 people that you can do in an hour.
Yeah.
Do the math. Yep. So sell 30 tickets for the hour that he's going to be there. Not 250 tickets.
Yeah.
So everybody has a 7 second experience as they come through. Like that to me, that just drives me crazy because those VIP packages are expensive.
And that is a sad part. And I've seen that happen. I've seen both sides of it. I've seen Billy Piper from Doctor Who just line up with everybody and do a different pose and want to talk to every single person that comes through for the photo. Then I've seen other ones where it is just literally cookie cutter. Here you are, stand, smile, good, see ya, next.
Right.
And that is not a great experience. No. It really isn't.
No, there's got to be a better way to do that stuff. But in any case, news came out of that show, Matthew. And I'm trying to think of where this news came from. Well, I'll do the Star Wars news first. IDW, Matthew, is going to be producing Star Wars Kids Comics.
Huh.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it?
That's very interesting.
Because who did you believe was going to be doing Star Wars comics?
I would just assume it was Marvel because they're the same company.
Well, IDW Publishing has been awarded, Matthew, a license by Disney Licensed Publishing for Star Wars comics aimed at younger readers. The company announced at Star Wars Celebration. The first title, launching fall 2017, will be called Star Wars Adventures and will be part of the Journey to Star Wars The Last Jedi publishing program, according to the announcement. IDW has previously released Star Wars Micro Collection Fun Packs and artist editions, and will begin publishing collections of the Star Wars newspaper strips in May.
Very interesting.
Now, in other news, it was announced that Archie is going to be publishing Marvel Comics Digests.
Huh.
Isn't that interesting? Marvel Entertainment and Archie Comics announced a partnership to create and distribute new Marvel Comics Digests for comic shops, newsstands, and big box retailers. Archie Comics will publish 6 Marvel Digests a year, with 4 planned for 2017. The collections will include stories from various eras that will include Marvel's most well-known heroes. The first issue, Marvel Comics Digest starring the Amazing Spider-Man, will feature Tales of Spidey and the Avengers. Future digests will focus on Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Black Widow, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and the X-Men. Working closely with Archie, Marvel is beyond excited to continue its reach and exposure level as we offer our retailer partners, local comic shops, and large chain retailers a new, fun, and easily digestible way to dive into Marvel Comics universe and produce lifelong fans, said Marvel SVP Sales and Marketing David Gabriel.
It's interesting because I thought when you were reading that, all I could think of is them looking around saying, we want to make a digest-sized book. Who do we talk to? You know what? Archie knows how to do it. They've been doing it for a while. Let's get with them.
I think that makes sense, right? But what I read – so absolutely. I mean, if you're – and one could argue that's a smarter way to do it, right? Because you think to yourself like, okay, who has the distribution channels already? Who has the relationships with these big box retailers? Who is experienced in doing this right now? Archie is.
Yeah.
Well, then doesn't it make sense that we would reach a partnership with them, figure it out, and have them do what they do best with some of our characters? Makes sense, right? But it's interesting to hear those stories of like some of this stuff getting sort of shopped out. And the Star Wars news I thought was particularly interesting, right? Because you had Dark Horse, who for years was putting out amazing Star Wars
yes.
books and fantastic series. And we were wondering how they were going to fare post-Star Wars world, right? And you just assumed that when that came under the Disney banner, that Marvel would do any Star Wars publishing of comics forever.
Yeah, and it seems like they're starting to sell the demographic to a different company. It's like, hey, we got Star Wars for toddlers. Who wants that one? We've got Star Wars for big people. We're going to keep here. And then we now have Star Wars younger adventures. Who wants that one?
So there's an interesting article up on ICV2 by Rob Salkowitz, and this is the title of it, which I thought was interesting for us to discuss. Does Disney see Marvel as a brand, not a publisher? Okay. Mm. And I'm just going to read snippets. This is a great article. You should absolutely go read it. It's on ICV2.com. Big news out of Star Wars Celebration Orlando this weekend. There will be a new line of kid-friendly Star Wars comics called Star Wars Adventures that will blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah coming from IDW Publishing under license from Disney. This is good news for fans since IDW makes really good licensed comics. which is true.
It is true.
And for IDW, considering that Star Wars is essentially a license to print money these days. And it's not like Marvel is completely left out in the cold, as it was also announced that Marvel will be doing its own tie-in, a four-issue miniseries called Star Wars Captain Phasma. By the way, there will be a Captain Phasma novel written by Delilah Dawson coming out as well before that new movie. Okay, but it's a bit curious, he says, because the kids' comics look like a sales gold mine in the wider world relative to the more mature direct market titles from Marvel, and Marvel seems like it could use a bit of good news on the sales front. So he's basically saying Marvel has kind of not been doing the greatest in sales lately. That would be probably pretty big for Marvel if they were doing that kids' imprint as opposed to IDW, right? And so he goes on to talk about sort of the history of stuff at Dark Horse, and Marvel's comics doing great creatively and financially. He says the Marvel ongoing and limited series dominated retail sales charts in 2015 as excitement built for Star Wars The Force Awakens. Many retailers say that Star Wars single-handedly rescued a sales year pockmarked by DC's awful Convergence event and Marvel's disappointing Secret Wars. So he's basically saying Star Wars basically kept things afloat during the lead-up into The Force Awakens. When Star Wars Rogue came out last fall, it seemed primed and ready for the same treatment. Like The Force Awakens, Rogue One introduced a lot of new characters and provided plenty of juicy linkages to existing Star Wars mythology. That's exactly the kind of franchise installment that benefits from having a secondary story platform, like comics, to provide little bits of added detail around the periphery. Stuff that doesn't necessarily change the movie, but draws hardcore fans in like catnip. Turns out that not only were there no new or existing titles in Marvel's very limited Star Wars comics line that tied into that franchise, we won't even be seeing an adaptation from Marvel in stores until later this month. This is after plans for a prequel comic announced last year at C2E2 ended up falling through with scant explanation. And now, with The Last Jedi publishing strategy taking shape, Marvel once again appears to be getting crumbs from the table, not a full serving. This is unfortunate, considering what Marvel could bring to the table. It says, the simplest explanation for the lack of synergy here is that Disney is such a sprawling media octopus that one tentacle doesn't know what the other one is doing. Alternatively, and non-exclusively, there could be a tad of territoriality at work between divisions that have been both recent acquisitions aimed at the same general geek demographic. So maybe he's positing there is some rivalry there between the Star Wars side of things and the Marvel side of things, which is why Marvel isn't getting everything Star Wars related. He says, even before it was acquired by Disney, Marvel's value was in its IP portfolio of licensable characters and media-ready storylines, not in the paltry millions it banks putting out actual comic books. Mm. That, to me, is the most important thing that he said so far, is that Disney getting Marvel had nothing to do with comic books.
Yeah.
It was about getting control of those licensable characters.
Yes.
Right? The very recognizable on the bedsheets and on your socks and on your underoos and on every other thing that they can license out, your Trapper Keeper.
Yep. And we knew that when they did it. We knew that all they wanted was to have a Spider-Man walking around Disney Park.
So he goes on to further support, you know, kind of where he's going with this, but he says the only real explanation here, aside from office politics, is that to Disney, and perhaps to Marvel itself, Marvel equals superheroes sold to superhero fans through comic shops, full stop. They are the legacy story platform for Marvel, for MCU properties, and an occasional source of PR headaches, getting just a small enough slice of the Star Wars pie to avoid embarrassing questions. So let Marvel do a couple of Star Wars books so that people don't start raising conspiracy theories like he's doing here. But at the end of the day, they care about Marvel because they can use their characters for other things that have nothing to do with comics, and they could care less about the comic stuff. He says, in this view of the world, whatever sales advantages Marvel or its retail partners could gain by more fully exploiting the Star Wars universe in comics is not worth the potential branding muddle that it might cause Disney as Disney grooms its carefully segmented audience on the path from cradle to grandparent. So they have a plan for Star Wars fans, and getting Marvel in the mix may not be helpful to that. He said that's a sound marketing strategy, and as Obi-Wan helpfully reminds us, only a Sith deals in absolutes, Matthew. The opinions expressed in this column are solely those of the writer. So I urge you to go and read that article, because I found it very, very interesting, but it makes a lot of sense. And we have talked about that on a couple of different occasions. for Disney, Marvel is superheroes that they can put in movies and on socks and t-shirts and other licensed products. Comic books mean nothing to them.
Absolutely. I always talk about that with people, that I remember when I was a young kid, when the first Superman movie came out, that movie was there to push the comic book. That was what it was for. Nowadays, it's completely different. The comic book is sort of the afterthought to the movie. And when you were reading that thing about Star Wars, it really made me think. Recently on Yahoo News, it was going around where you saw the little kid at Disney Park go up to Darth Vader and bow down to Darth Vader. Did you see that video clip?
I did not.
So it's really cute because everybody's like, oh, look at this kid. Apparently their parents trained her right. Like there was a Luke Skywalker and the kid went right over to Darth Vader and bent down on knee and bowed to Darth Vader. And the whole place erupted and went crazy. And you saw the little kid was just doing what they saw in the movies and on TV and in the books. And all I thought was, I imagine 5 times as many people saw that than even know that there is a Star Wars comic book out.
Oh, for sure.
So that's what's going on. And back when I was younger too, the comic book, the Star Wars comic that Marvel was putting out, was the filler to keep you waiting and ready for the next movie.
Yep.
And that's what it was. And it's sad that this is going on. It's really odd to think that a company like Disney, as big as it is, doesn't know left hand and right hand. And to think that they're, that's a lot of controversy, I'm trying to think of the word. I just went completely blank. Conspiracy theory. Thank you. It seems to be, you can fill that with conspiracy theory all over the place, but it is really weird that you have one department kind of not looking at the other department.
But it makes perfect sense to me when we go back to the discussion that we had a couple weeks ago about, like, what is Marvel doing shying away from diversity and going back to meat and potatoes, because it's just them marketing to the same old audience again and again and again, right?
Yeah.
And you're thinking to yourself, like, why would you do that? Why would you cut yourself off from bringing in new readers? But when you step back and say, well, Disney doesn't care if they have any new readers because they don't care about comic books anyways. So they're perfectly content with Marvel to continue spinning its wheels and achieve the same sales just to basically tread water.
Yeah.
They're fine with Marvel Comics doing that because they don't care about the comic books at all. They care about the properties that they can license through other types of media. So for them, as long as Marvel is not completely tanking and costing Disney money, what the heck do they care?
Yep.
So now it makes perfect sense to me why Marvel can just say, well, we're going to back away from all the stuff that we were trying to do over the past few years, and we're going to just go back to giving people the same old superheroes that they've always read before, because all we care about is just selling to that same audience over and over and over again. As long as we do that, as long as we can hold on for dear life to that audience that has always read us, then we're okay. Then we're not going to get in trouble by the boss.
Yeah.
So that makes perfect sense now. So I just find that fascinating.
I have friends that work at Disney in Florida, and when they talk about the boss, they talk about the rat.
Yeah.
That's what you call it. That's what they call it, the rat.
And the interesting thing is, right, like we're interested in comic books.
Yep.
And so we place so much importance on the news of the industry and what's happening in comic books. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
We care, and we are overly invested in all of these little decisions that get made. They don't care.
Yeah. Yep.
Even the people who own them don't care. So it's like, it's just kind of a reality check to step back from it and to think that Disney could give a crap about the comic books that Marvel makes.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If you're a lifelong comic book fan who has sunk years and years and years of your emotional and time investment and financial investment into these characters in this universe, to know that it literally doesn't even matter.
Yeah, the powers above could easily just, we just don't want to have that office anymore. Shut it down. We don't care. So it is interesting that they're fanning.
If they decided, a couple of weeks from now that, there's really only 20 characters in the Marvel universe that really sell anything.
Yeah.
So we're just going to shelve all the rest of them. Like, we're going to stop putting out all of these other books, and we're just going to sell a Spider-Man book, an X-Men book, an Avengers book, a Captain America book, an Iron Man book, and that's it.
I wouldn't mind if they even did that.
And not, we're not even making any more comics because why bother?
That's the sad part of it.
You know what I mean? Like that could eventually just be that.
Like I always look at Marvel and think, I am never, ever, ever, ever going to get a Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos comic book ever again. I will never see another news story. But it's sad to think that that's probably the only thing that would help them in the short term right now is to just streamline it so much where here's one Avengers book. Here's – we don't have 15 because – I would buy one Avengers book.
And you could – I mean, again, taking a step back from everything, we talk a lot about the big two, right?
Yep.
So you could easily say, well, who cares about Marvel? Like who cares if they even go away? It's more room for everybody else who's making great comics. When we talk about Boom, when we talk about Dark Horse, when we talk about IDW, we talk about Valiant and Action Lab and all these other companies and books that we talk about on the show, in one – line of thinking, there is more room for them then, right? If Marvel's not putting out 50,000 books. But at the same time, if Marvel goes away completely, for many eyes that could come into the comics industry, those eyes come in through Marvel.
Yes.
And they come in through DC. And so I think the most disappointing thing is that when you feel like the big two, who, like it or not, are seen as the ambassadors of a medium of comic books, are not doing enough to bring people into comic book reading, it hurts everybody down the line.
Yep.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you want more people reading comics. And yes, you want them to read beyond Marvel and DC. And you want them to go and look at all of these other companies and look at some of the books because they'll find that there are books that are being tailor-made to their taste outside of Marvel and DC. But if they never come in the front door of comic book reading, that's a problem.
Yep.
Which is why, again, thank goodness for the digital front, right? Thank goodness for some of these other avenues for people to get in, like your Comixologies, like the digital platforms that the different publishers have where they can put an app on the App Store and bring people in that way. But if the big two aren't going to be ambassadors for getting people into comic book reading, that's a problem.
It's like owning a comic store is like owning a movie theater. You are victim to what comes out, and you are victim to what somebody is pushing on you to show that is going to bring people in. And that's always been the saddest thing is when a company suffers, like when DC is in that creative drought where it's just putting crap out, and Marvel's in kind of in that right now, not kind of, they are in it right now. It's the stores that hurt because people are not buying the books. And that's where you always feel bad about when the industry is kind of suffering, because you and I can always go find our books somewhere else. It's that store owner that's owned a store, trying to keep it up, trying to keep things going. It's sad for them.
Imagine if the big blockbuster movies that are in any way comic book related, instead of a mid-credit scene that brings you to the next movie, have a mid-credit scene that shows one of the people involved with the movie in a comic book shop and said, "Hey, did you like this movie? Do you think it was awesome? Here's the great thing. Go down the street right now and go to your local comic book shop and see that there is an entire world of comics, not just about us, but about all of these other great things. And you could find these things because, again, the goal is to get people in the front door of the comic book shop. The goal is to get them to look at the digital storefront and what other titles are being offered and then have them expand their horizons. But if someone can go to a blockbuster Marvel or DC movie, never be mentioned that there's a comic book related to it. We know that because we love these characters and we go see these characters. But you can go and not have anything about comics mentioned at all and have nothing in the credits or nothing in the anything about the movie that's telling you to go seek out your comic book shop.
Yep.
What a wasted opportunity, right?
It is.
To bring in new readers. And what does it tell you? That they don't care.
Yeah, considering we've had some major blockbuster movies that have brought thousands of people. Like, how many people even knew Harley Quinn was a comic book character? They know we're from the media side of things. So now all of a sudden, why are these people not jumping in droves to come buy the comic? That's the sad part of it.
Right. That is the sad part of it, Matthew. But I'll tell you what, we love comic books and we're going to talk about comic books right now. First, we're going to talk about beards and we're going to talk about the fact that I am dangerously, dangerously running out of my Viking Oils beard oil.
So the good news is Gary was at a show recently showing all of the cool stuff. I guess there was a beard expo.
Okay.
These are things that go on.
Can we bring the beard expo here?
We will.
Because I am like scraping the bottom of the jar in terms of beard oil. Like my beard is, it's in a precarious state right now. I could lose it all. It could just fall right off my face. if I don't get my product.
So I mentioned to Gary, I sent him a message, said, hey, when you get back, we need some stuff. So we are going to get it. And it is always good stuff. Anytime when I have it, like, again, I shaved a couple weeks ago and was excited in the
silky
fact
smooth.
That the skin underneath, there's nothing wrong.
Look
it's
great.
Not dry. It's not gross.
I've got enough beard for the both of us.
Yes, you do.
VikingOilsLLC.com is where you want to go for that stuff. It's where I need to go because I'm getting very nervous now.
Yes.
I'm down to, like, the stuff when you push the plunger on the bottle, like, it just dribbles out now. It doesn't.
Oh, we're going to have to get you.
We're in trouble. I mean, it's getting ugly over there. Okay. I'll tell you what's not ugly, though, Matthew. Crossovers between Saturday morning cartoon characters and violent reformed villains.
Yes.
Please explain to me how you are holding the comic that you are holding in your hands right now.
So Suicide Squad, The Banana Splits. Now, a few months ago, they announced that because of the relationship that DC has with Hanna-Barbera,
yes,
with some of these reimaginings of the characters, that they were going to do 4 standalone giant size issues featuring a Hanna-Barbera character and a DC mainstay.
Right.
So the first one that I saw and got was
Suicide
Squad.
And you literally threw money at your computer when you read that announcement online.
Because your mind races. Now, first of all, you look at it and I think the first thing you think is, all right, I'm not going to get it because it can't be that good. But then you start looking at the writers and the artists that are involved in this one. And this one right here, Tony Bedard. The guy knows how to write a comic. So I was in right there with not a lot of concern. Ben Caldwell is the penciler. Mark Morales is the inker and a solid, solid team. So to give you a little bit of a history, we all know who the Suicide Squad are.
Yes.
They are a bunch of, I was going to say B and C list villains, but they are not now. They are A list villains that have been put in jail. And if they go save the day for Amanda Waller and Task Force X, then they get time commuted off their sentence.
Sure.
The Banana Splits are a group of traveling musicians that are a big dog, a big elephant, a big lion, and a big cat.
Uh-huh.
They have nothing to do with anything violent, anything bad.
Sure.
Their whole life was driving around in a van and going to show to show. And now, here we are in Los Angeles as they are driving to a show in their yellow, looks like a Hummer with a big caterpillar-looking thing on the top. They're being chased by the police. And the police stop them and say, get out of the cars. Hands where we can see them. And then you turn the page, and it is like a scene out of the Planet of the Apes, where you've got a dog with a bow tie. You've got an elephant in a suit. You've got a lion wearing a nice coat. And it's a monkey. And a monkey who is there wearing a vest. And they're all freaking out. And they all have, I'll show you, Brian, they've got these crazy smiles on their faces. Now, they have the crazy smiles because this was not a cartoon. This was a live-action show.
Correct.
That Hanna-Barbera did. So when you saw that monkey dude, he had that smile on his face the entire episode, even when he was talking. Lips didn't move, which made it creepy yet really cool when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it scared little kids, but us, when we were 6, 7, 8 years old, this was perfect. So the cop is like, what are you guys, mutated lab animals? And then one of the other cops gets on the radio going, dispatch, we've got a possible metahuman threat. So now the Banana Splits are freaking out. They're like, wait a minute. We were just going to a show and then one of them breaks into song and the cops get really upset and they start shooting at him. And the guy's like, no, no, no. The dog goes, wait. I've got something I can prove that we are who we are. And as he reaches into his vest to pull out his wallet, they just start shooting more and more. So now they're hiding on the outside, the other side of the van, wondering what is going on? What is happening? The elephant is getting really, really mad. And before anything can happen, they get frozen. Like the spotlight hits them and you hear freeze. And now you go to Belle Reve Penitentiary, which is in, New Orleans, I believe. And you've got Amanda Waller there who's talking to Rick Flagg saying, you know, what is going on right now? And he's like, mission compromised. We've got some problems. People were expecting us. And as this is going on, as this part is going on, you have the Banana Splits all standing there with their arms up in the air, now surrounded by like a SWAT team. And they're like, hey, hands up. We're all friends. This is going to be good, right? And the cop's like, oh, yeah, right. And then you see a scene where you've got a bunch of cops just tasing them. And you see tails up in the air, glasses flying. And then you go back again to where the Suicide Squad is on a mission and things are just not going well. They're all on the run. Then you turn the page and at the Belle Reve Penitentiary, when you see the Banana Split showing up in orange. And the thing is, you can see why they're confused with a bunch of baddies, because inside this cell is a whole bunch of animal-looking villains. So they're going through and they're singing and they're all freaking out because these guys are all cool. They're all happy about things. And as they're walking through with their food, they're doing like the banana split walk that they used to do. They sit down and one of the bad guys goes, "What are you guys? You guys some kind of band or something?" They're like, "Yeah, we play mostly bubblegum pop. We haven't had a hit in a few years though." And then they said, "Oh, bubblegum, that actually sounds pretty bad out loud." And then so now the guys in there are starting to give them a hard time. And Amanda Waller is watching this saying, "You know what? You got to get those guys out of the jail right now." And the elephant is pretty funny because he looks like that comic book elephant, or Mr. Elephant, or Elephant Man from Image Comics.
Okay.
He's just a big, huge elephant. So he starts taking people out, smashing them. And then all of a sudden, the fighting stops. They get told, "You know what? You guys are free, but you're going to have to work with us. We got a mission for you." And then you have a one-page, nine-panel montage of the dog clicking his pistol, putting on his vest, a bulletproof vest, and then fitting his bow tie. And each of them are putting on their weapons, getting everything ready. And their mission is to get dropped out where the Suicide Squad is in big trouble. So the next scene, you see them walking to a plane, and then they're on a plane. Then they get thrown out of the plane. They're parachuting. And these guys have no clue what even to do. They don't even know what is going on. So all of a sudden, the monkey's there going, "Yep, this turned out to be a pretty bad day." And then Killer Croc shows up. And then you have one of them, you have the dog or the lion that's stuck in the woods, and all of a sudden these crazy, creepy twins show up, and then Katana shows up and uses her sword to get him off the tree, and he's looking over going, "What are those little girls?" And then she goes after the little girls, starts chopping them up, and he's freaking out, but then she says, "Hey, don't worry about it, they're robots." Then Harley Quinn is with the elephant, and she's pointing at these little kids. They're all walking up. And basically, the little girls were robots that were bad that they had to go in and capture or destroy because they were going to do some bad stuff. So all of a sudden, the Suicide Squad and the Banana Splits team up. They get Deathshot. They go in, and they find this factory or this laboratory that is creating these robots, destroy all the robots. They find Rick Flag. They get him out of there. They save the day. And that is how that ends, with some crazy witty banter after that. But then the last panel shows that they never got out of Belle Reve Penitentiary, and they're performing a show at the prison. And you've got
they're now the house band.
Yes, Amanda Waller's like, "This is actually happening, is it?" And Rick's like, "Yep, we created a monster." And then you get from Mark Russell, Howard Porter, and Steve Buscellato, you get the continuing adventures of Snagglepuss. I almost said Top Cat. That's another one. You get Snagglepuss. Now, Snagglepuss with the cat who talks
like
this.
Takes it stage righty,
yes.
Then.
And he is on trial. And he's on trial because they are thinking that his activities are un-American. And you see him getting out of court, trying to do a show. It's just a silly, crazy thing. And apparently, the Snagglepuss Chronicles are going to continue.
Really?
Yes. So you get a 4 or 5 page snapshot of this.
So that's just a teaser.
Just a teaser, but this book was a ton of fun. You're not going to get Gone with the Wind in this one. You're not going to get, you know, The Wizard of Oz. You are just going to get a fun story. Now, the book is $4.99, but it definitely is worth it because you get a lot of extra pages and a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of $4.99 books, Matthew.
Bring it on.
We know that they're a Marvel staple, right? And so in the past few weeks, as you listen to this, it's probably maybe a little bit longer than that. So you had your coming out of the Inhumans versus X-Men event. You've got a sort of a reset book in Inhumans Prime. You've got a reset book in X-Men Prime that sort of set the stage for the titles that are going to be spinning out of them. And then you have a bunch of new titles for the X-Men and the Inhumans, right? So I'm going to talk about Inhumans Prime right now. Now, I finished reading Inhumans versus X-Men, and I enjoyed it overall. It's better than some of the mainstream Marvel events that have happened over the past few years. It, to me, wasn't necessarily shocking. But basically what you have right now is the Inhumans are at a point where the Terrigen Mists have been destroyed, and they are not sure if there's ever going to be any more Inhumans being able to go through the process of transformation. So, but there's a lot of Inhumans, right? Because over the past few years in the Marvel Universe, there has been tons.
That mist got everywhere.
Yeah, the mist got everywhere. Everybody got cocooned. People, we've got all these new heroes. You got Moon Girl. You got Ms. Marvel. You've got a whole bunch of new Inhumans that have come up over the past few years. And so it's not like they are a small group, but it doesn't look like that group might be getting any bigger anytime soon. So now we start off in the orbit of Earth, and you have someone on a ship who is watching a newscast from Earth. And the anchor is saying, you know, our top story, the growing conflict between mutants and Inhumans has ended with the destruction of the Terrigen Cloud. Terrigen, while highly toxic to mutants, had an almost religious significance for Inhumans, and it's known as the only catalyst for their strange abilities. And this person who's in the ship is watching this and is eventually saying, oh, they don't understand. They don't even know what Terrigen really is. So you start off with this mystery of, like, are the Inhumans wrong about Terrigen? Like, what? What, maybe all hope is not lost, Matthew. So now we go over to the Grand Canyon, and you have Maximus, who is Black Bolt's brother, mm-hmm. who is a my understanding is that he is a manipulator of minds, and he is there with Triton, an Inhuman by the name of the Unspoken, and an Inhuman by the name of Lineage, and they are going through the desert. And he's kind of bantering with them. He's called Maximus the Mad for a reason, because he's always sort of blathering on about something. But he is like the Loki of the Inhumans. He's always causing trouble for his own family and within the ranks of the Inhumans. And so they're kind of walking around, and you see pretty quickly that Maximus has controlled Triton and the other Inhumans and brought them here. And he says, you know, we're tied to you for now. One way or another, all traitors who can never go home because we've hooked ourselves up to your wagon. And he's saying, you know, we're doing this because you told us to. You've made us your little gang. You got what you wanted. Isn't that enough? And he says, oh, it is now. And he turns around and you see Karnak show up with Lockjaw. And they teleport into the area. And Karnak shows up, and you have Triton, who says, I'm not going to fight this guy. I'm not going to fight my own brother. And he says, well, I think you will. And he mind controls him. And then Triton goes and attacks him. And from what we've seen of Karnak, especially over the past few years, he seems a much more powerful than he ever was in the earlier incarnations mm-hmm. of the Inhumans. Like, he can find anybody's weakness. He's sort of like a, you know, a master of hand-to-hand combat and all this kind of stuff. And he's fighting Triton, and he's fighting Triton, and he's not having any real problem with it. And eventually he's able to strike Triton perfectly in the middle of the forehead and basically knock him out. So Triton's going to stop attacking. And then he turns his attention to Maximus. But Maximus has had the other guy, who is the Unspoken, turn into a giant monster, because that's apparently his thing. He uses Terrigen as fuel to change into giant monsters and stuff like that. So now Karnak has to fight that guy. And Karnak's talking to him, and that monster's saying to him, what do you think my weakness is? And he says something about his eyesight. And he says, basically, because you're not looking in the right direction. And the guy turns around, and all of the other Inhumans have just shown up. So you have Crystal and Medusa. You have Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. You have Johnny Storm, who is now dating Medusa. Yep. You have Gorgon. You have Miss Marvel. You have all these new Inhumans that have shown up. And you have Black Bolt. And they're all there. And once they arrive, Maximus decides to mind control all of the young Inhumans, the new Inhumans, and make them fight the classic Inhumans. So you get a big knock up between the young kids and the old guard going back and forth until they can basically stop Maximus from mind controlling everyone. And they do that with the help of an Inhuman named Captain Swain. And her ability can kind of cancel out Maximus's ability to control people's minds. So they end up doing that, and they end up taking him down, and he's captured and he's brought to New Attilan. And what we find out is that that was his plan all along. His whole plan was to lure Black Bolt out into the open and have himself get captured and brought him here, because he has some sort of message for Black Bolt. And you see Black Bolt, who's obviously not speaking, mm-hmm. comes and visits him in his cell, and Maximus is going on and on about, like, why would I do this? Why would I let you capture me? After all the trouble I've caused, why would I let you bring me back into the fold? Why? And he says, you know, I'm the Lord of Misrule. I'm my brother's keeper. And he's saying, and I have a message for you. And so he kind of beckons Black Bolt over to his cell, and he says, come closer. You know, you're safe. My powers can't work here. I'm in a cell. Let me whisper the secret. And he whispers something to him that completely throws off Black Bolt. Black Bolt storms upstairs, and right away Medusa's like, what's going on? What did he say to you? And of course he doesn't tell her, and she's like, look, you can confide in me. And he kind of walks away from her. So whatever Maximus said to him has him rattled. Now you have Maximus, who has been sedated and he has been restrained, and he apparently is being sent off to somewhere where he will not be able to bother anybody anymore. And I don't know if I read somewhere that it's going to be the kiln, but I thought the kiln was destroyed in the Annihilation event, which was, that was the cosmic prison that got destroyed in the very first Annihilation event. But anyways, they're sending him somewhere. And as that's happening, you have Medusa that gets up and addresses all of the Inhumans at New Atalanta. And she says, look, the time has come for our form of leadership to go by the wayside. We're not going to have a king and a queen anymore. I'm stepping down. Black Bolt stepping down. We are now going to turn the power over to all of you. And for now, ISO is going to be the Inhuman that is going to be the acting head of state until you guys can put a government in place. This is going to be a whole new change for the Inhumans. We're all going to work together, all that kind of stuff. But we're stepping down as sort of the royal family. And so as she's talking about that, she's also talking about Maximus and saying, you know, we're going to put him somewhere where no one is going to be able to – he's not going to be able to bother anybody anymore, and we're going to get rid of him. And you see, as this is happening, you see Black Bolt off sort of contemplating whatever it was that Maximus told him. And so after that's all said and done, you have Crystal, who is talking to this Captain Swain about, you know, what just happened and how this is sort of a new beginning. And she walks outside onto the balcony, and she turns around, and she sees Marvel Boy. And Marvel Boy says – she says, where the heck did you come from? And he says, I came from space. Come with me if you want to be awesome.
Nice.
That's a nice way to end that. So we see that it was him that was watching the newscast at the beginning of the issue and obviously has some revelation about Terrigen and about the Inhumans that he can pass on to them. But we also see that it is sort of a new beginning for the Inhumans because Medusa and Black Bolt are going to be no longer king and queen of the Inhumans. The other thing that I forgot to mention that is in here, and I don't remember if it's in this one or if it was from a different issue, but you had – oh, it might have been at the end of Inhumans versus X-Men, but you had basically Medusa breaking up with Johnny Storm.
Hmm. Interesting.
Breaking up with him. So their little tryst is over, and now presumably she is either going to be off on her own or her and Black Bolt are getting back together, but – that whole chapter is over as well. So as a sort of a reset the table button for the Inhumans universe, I mean, it's not bad. And again, this is written by Al Ewing, pencils by Ryan Sook and Chris Allen, inks by Ryan Sook, Walden Wong, and Keith Champagne, and colors by Paul Mounts. And so it's an okay table setting for what's next for the Inhumans, but I didn't think that it did a fantastic job of, like, if you haven't read anything of Inhumans versus X-Men, if you haven't followed any of the new Inhumans that have cropped up over the past few years, I don't think you're going to pick up Inhumans Prime and be like, oh, I get it. It all makes sense now. Because what they really don't do at all is go into what is happening with Maximus. Like, I know he's Black Bolt's brother. I can't even remember if he was part of Inhumans versus X-Men, but I don't think he really was. I think actually he got brought in maybe at the end or something like that, but I don't know what his story is. So there wasn't a good enough job done of filling in the backstory of some of these characters and why you care, because there's a lot of Inhumans now. So we get the part about Black Bolt and Medusa kind of starting a new chapter and the Inhumans going to have a new form of government and all that kind of stuff. But the characters themselves, there's not a lot of backstory given in that. So I don't know if I'm going to be picking up. I think the new series is called Royals, the new Inhuman series. I'm probably going to check out the first issue of that. This kind of, I guess, shows you why the Inhumans are cool and you should care about them in addition to the X-Men, because there are some very interesting characters in sort of in the Inhuman stable. But now that we're at this place where we're going to have the Inhumans doing their thing and the X-Men doing their thing, and you're not really sure which one Marvel is prioritizing.
Yeah.
I think it makes it harder for the Inhumans to keep people's interest. You know what I mean? Because when X-Men were sort of put on the back burner and Inhumans were pushed to the forefront, then it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, this is their new X-Men. I guess we should care about this if we care about what's happening in the Marvel Universe. But now that the X-Men are coming back in full force, they're really going to have to carve out a place for the Inhumans in the Marvel Universe and show how they're different from the X-Men and why you should care about them. That's a tall order.
And sadly, it probably is going to go back to the way it used to be, where the Inhumans were that kind of, well, there they are. We'll use them every once in a while.
I mean,
it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them.
I think that the most interesting time of my reading anything about the Inhumans was when they were involved in the cosmic stuff. You know what I mean? So, like, I feel like that's a place where you have room to grow with the Inhumans, but it'll be interesting moving forward how they sort of decide to handle that and if it catches on with everybody. Mm. Because the Inhumans are part of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, the Inhumans are part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so it's not like and there's going to be an Inhumans TV show now. So they're going to be here moving forward. But again, going back to our conversation at the beginning of the episode, if comic books aren't really the big deal in that, then I guess maybe they don't have to make people care about them.
Yeah, and that's pretty sad. So we're going to go now to a comic and a group that we all care about. We watch them every Thursday night. We are loving it, and that is Riverdale. This is the first issue of the comic that is based on the, and I love to see this, new hit TV series.
I'm a little bit behind in Riverdale, but I think it doesn't come back with new episodes till next week. Or am I wrong about that?
I think we had a new one last week.
I don't think we have a new one this week,
okay, though. Okay. Because it has been – every episode has been bam, bam, bam. And they have gotten the cliffhanger part down right, where each episode you're like looking at the clock going, 3 more minutes, this isn't going to work. But it's a long-haul show, and I have really enjoyed it. So I definitely wanted to take a look at the Riverdale comic. Now, this is two stories. One of them is Bloodsport. The other is Bring It On. The first written by Will Ewing. The second by Michael Grossi, both drawn by Joe Eisma. Both have colors by Andre Szymanowicz and letters by Janice Chang in the first, John Workman in the second. And this one, Bloodsport, has Archie, and you see him getting the football. And as he goes back to he's a quarterback, so the snap goes way over his head. So as he lunges up to go get it, he gets clocked. And he's laying there on the ground, and then Coach Taylor comes up and says, you know, we needed someone to take on number 9, and that is you. And that was –
which goes right back to the TV show where he's taking Jason's jersey.
He's taking Jason's jersey.
His number.
And he says, I'm picking you, Andrews, because you got big shoes to fill, and I think you can do it. Then you've got Reggie going up, and it's that scene from the show where he goes, dude, you that's Jason's. He goes, I know. And now you're back to – you see Archie walking through school, and he's going into one of the classrooms, and he goes, what the hell? And he goes, welcome to Hell Week. Now, this is really interesting because you've got the old guard of the football team. Now, you played high school football, Brian, and I know
– I did.
I know high school football is a lot different than any other sport. With football, it is all about team. It is all about rites of passage. You definitely didn't get that in hockey. You didn't get it in baseball. So this is kind of something that I think you would probably appreciate a little bit more from your understanding. But in the show, they're only sophomores. And now all of a sudden you've got Moose, who's a sophomore, Reggie, who's a sophomore, and Archie making the varsity team.
They're getting hazed pretty badly by the older kids on the team.
And it's funny to see because you always see on the show, Reggie's that cocksure kid and Moose is a big monster. They're on their knees in front of the other team going – the rest of the team, and they're going, get ready for your initiation. So what they do is you see them in the locker room, and you see shadows, and they're like, I can't believe they're actually going to make us do this. They said, you know what? Let's just freaking do it and get it done with. And you see the three of them running naked through the football field.
Streaking.
And the girls are like, you're insane. Then the next thing that they have to do, which is probably a very interesting one, they have to go to their arch rival school and put plastic forks in every square inch of the football field and not get caught. So you see the field just covered with forks as they leave. Then they have to toilet paper some houses. And as the stuff is going on, Jughead goes up and he's like, hey, I see that you're eating a lot. And he's like, yeah, I got to keep my weight. I got to keep doing this and for football. And you see that Jughead obviously has an issue with the sports part, which I had friends that didn't like the fact that I played sports. It was kind of an alien world to them. And you see where Jughead just doesn't understand it. He's like, you know, these are a bunch of Neanderthals. What are you doing this? And he's like, he says, look, you know, I just got to do this. So you got to leave me be. So the next part of the initiation is the freshmen. Now you see that there is 5 of them, or the underclassmen, are all brought to the river where Jason died. And they now have to swim across and then come back. And the current's really strong. It's football season, Brian, so let's just assume the water's cold.
Let's assume the water's a little chilly.
And when they get in there, they're talking about the fact that, you know, Archie's saying, my feet went numb, my muscles are tight, every part of my body
barely
is burning because I can't do this. So he gets to the other side, and then he comes back. And when he gets there, he sees Moose, and the team is like looking at him going, well, he says he can't swim. And he's like, well, he swim if he wants to be a bulldog.
Right.
And Archie goes, you know what? I'm going to go for Moose. And then Reggie goes up to him and goes, look, you're exhausted. You can't do this. You know, you don't need to be, we don't need another Jason Blossom. And that doesn't sit well with some of the older guys on the team. And he's like, you know what? He goes, I'm going to do it. So he goes across, and as he swims and comes back, he is looking down and he sees a zombified body of Jason, like he's imagining it.
Right, because he's almost blacking out because it's so cold, and this is his second run back and forth. Yeah.
And he sees this body, and then he gets up and he comes out, and he's like, Moose is like, thank you, Archie. And Archie's like, it's all good, Moose. And then one of the players goes up and goes, you know, you think you're a hero for doing this? He goes, you know, Hell Week is not even over yet. And that's, you see where, you know, they're just, one of the other guys is on the team going, dude, he did it. And I know, I assume, again,
there's always
football,
that one power-hungry guy that has to take it 10 steps farther than it needs to be, Matthew.
Yeah, and you see that again. You see it more in football, I think, than you do the other sports, because football is a grueling, punishing sport. I mean, every play is a car accident. Every time you're getting hit really hard, and that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to hit somebody hard. So these guys are all fired up. They're having their game, and then they put Archie in. So as he walks in, he goes into to go play. One of the other players comes up and hits him. And he says, the number on your chest, it's a bullseye. And he's kind of realizing that it is. So as the game is over, you see him in the locker room and he's looking in the mirror. And in the mirror is a zombified version of Jason Blossom with a bullet hole in the head.
Yep.
And that's how this part of the story ends. The next one is sort of the same thing. It is now the hazing of Betty and Veronica by Cheryl Blossom. So they're doing their cheers, and Cheryl is like, all right, Betty, you want to be a cheer? What do they call them? I forgot what they call them. I'm going to see if I can find it. River Vixens. She's like, you want to be a River Vixen? You're going to have to play the game. So she tells Betty, because her and Betty obviously have issues, she gives her a uniform and says, you need to wear this. Now, this uniform is a uniform in name only. It is so skimpy. And Betty's like, it's barely an eye patch. I can't wear this. And Veronica's like, don't do it. Don't stoop to her level. You don't need to do it. And then all of a sudden, as Veronica's trying to explain that you don't need to demean yourself, she goes, so how do I look? And then the next page, you see Betty walking down the hall wearing this skimpy little outfit. Everybody's looking and staring. And then Archie is like, is that? And Jughead's kind of freaking out about that. And then the two girls that are always with Cheryl were like, oh, my gosh, Cheryl, look, she actually did it. And she looks amazing. And then Cheryl freaks out about that and says, okay, so here's your next thing. You need to break into the school of our rival, and you need to steal the golden whistle. So you see Betty and Veronica going into the school. They sneak in through the men's room, and they go in. They break into the locker to get something, but they can't get the key. They can't break open, so Veronica picks up a fire extinguisher and throws it through the glass. And as they get it, they realize that they're being watched. It's a cop. They get arrested. Betty's mother is not too happy. She's sitting there screaming at her because she does not want to be – she doesn't even want her to be her cheerleader. And then all of a sudden, she hands her the whistle at the next practice and says, here you go. And she goes, okay, so it's time for your final task right now. You need to stand on the ledge of this building. Now, Betty is afraid of heights. So as she is there, she's thinking about the fact that she helped her sister when she was afraid of roller coasters, holding her hand so she could do that. And then in the last page, Veronica comes up and says, you don't need to do this alone. She holds her hand and they stand on the ledge together. So that is where it ends. And again, this is something that is a perfect, perfect foil for what is going on with the Archie comics. You have a bunch of covers. Althea Martinez is the cover that I got. Elliot Fernandez, Francisco Francavilla, which I didn't see that one. Peter Krause, Jrobel Moret-Fahn, and Ron Silas. And you also have the one shot available with another Althea Martinez cover. So another great issue. Now they have a digest size version of it as well. So if you
I saw that, is it the same stories as that though, or is it same, other stories?
It's the same one, and I believe that you also get the one shot from the Riverdale one shot. You might get those stories in there as well, because there is a lot in there. Now, Brian, I will show you the sad part of when I bought my book and I started reading it. Look at the pages. They got ripped.
Oh, man.
Yep, they got ripped somewhere, so I don't know where. So not too thrilled about that, but it did not.
You got a defective copy.
Yep, it did not diminish the fun of this book. So this is definitely something I'm going to be checking out every issue of.
Well, Matthew, it is time for our Out of the Long Box this week, and we are going to go back to, I believe, the year was 2012. Let me just double-check that. For a series that, it was June of 2012, number one here, a series that was put out by Boom Studios, and it is called Extermination. Now, the reason I pulled up this is because I was going to be interviewing Jeffrey Edwards for the upcoming Warlock 5 series mm-hmm. that he's going to be the artist on. However, I recognize the name. And then as soon as I called up the book, I was like, I remember this book because we talked about it on this very show. And if I'm not mistaken, it was like in episode like 448, 450, all the way back in 2012. That's 300 episodes now ago, Matthew, that we talked 300. Isn't that crazy?
We're old.
That we can say that. And it's called Extermination, written by Simon Spurrier, art by Jeffrey Edwards, colors by Blonde, and letters by Ed Dukeshire. The editor on this one was Bryce Carlson. This is 2012. What is awesome about this book is that it is a sort of a post-apocalyptic book that pits a hero and his arch nemesis together as teammates. Okay, so we start off in what looks like an absolute wasteland. So you see a city that's been completely destroyed. Everything's been turned to ash. You see buildings melted. You see basically a desert now where the ash and the winds are just kind of blowing all over the place. And then over the ridge comes a motorcycle and a sidecar. And you see two people on it. One of them is the hero known as Knox, who is very much a Batman type figure. Although he does carry two twin pistols with him. And the guy driving, and so he's hanging off of the sidecar and he is shooting his guns, and driving the motorcycle is the Red Reaper, who is sort of a cross between, I would say, like a Dr. Doom and a Dr. Octopus, right? He's the evil science mastermind. And these two are nemeses. And he's saying, you know, so you've got the Red Reaper who is saying, holy effing crap, blah, blah, blah. And you have Knox who's saying, mind your language, as they're kind of flying around. And they're being chased by this drone that is almost looks like it's ethereal. Like it's sort of made of this dream material. Like it's not from our dimension. And it's kind of Lovecraftian in its design. And so they're kind of flying around it, and Knox end up shooting the thing down, and then he makes Reaper turn off the motorcycle and they listen, because apparently these things, which they have named wine drones, make a particular whining noise when they're in the vicinity. And so they're kind of making sure that it's gone. So then it cuts from this post-apocalyptic scene to an average everyday night in the city pre-apocalypse, where you have Knox, who is going through the alleys like Batman would and beating the crap out of these criminals that are sometimes informants, and trying to find out what's going on, because he's saying, look, something's about to go down in my city. And you know, all the scumbags around here, tell me what's about to go on. Something's not right. It's been too quiet around here. And as he's talking to this guy, all of a sudden projected in the air, you have this giant picture of the Red Reaper, who is in some sort of a floating city. And he's saying, citizens of Duskburg, you are cordially invited to bow before your atomic god king. And so this is his big moment, right? So Knox decides to grapple up with his grappling hook up to this ship that's in the air now to have his big confrontation with his arch nemesis. Now we cut back to the present, where the two of them are combing through the remains of this alien technology that they've just shot down in the apocalypse. And they're bickering back and forth. And you're getting, as these first few pages go on, you're getting the fact that, holy crap, these guys were enemies It's the equivalent of like the Batman and the Joker.
Now I do remember
having
this.
To team up.
I think right? I think we described it to Enemy Mine.
Right.
If like, I can remember like, when like we were
Reed
talking
Richards
about this.
Like Reed Richards and Dr. Doom
yep.
being these one of a handful of survivors in the apocalypse and the two of them having to team up together because that's the only way they're going to survive, right? And they hate each other,
yep.
but they're teaming up together. So you have Reaper who ends up grabbing this to alien technology, and as soon as he does, it gives him like this psychic feedback and he throws up all over himself and everything. So apparently, whatever these monsters are that are coming through into our dimension and have completely destroyed the world are – they have psychic capabilities. And so as they're sitting there kind of talking, they turn around and they realize that the reason that there weren't more drones coming is because the drone already found them, and now they're sending in what they call a scout. And I'll show you, Matthew – and this is where I think Jeffrey Edwards' creature design and his artwork
nice.
It just pops. It's amazing.
And great
the colors. The colors are fantastic as well. You see sort of this thing materializing into our world, and it is a very – it's a cross between something you'd see in a Lovecraft story and something that's very sort of insect-like, and now that's coming after them, and you're like, holy crap. So now they have to deal with that, and they're trying to escape from there, and we cut back to the past again, and you're seeing – that this Knox character was part of like a Justice League. And there was another character who was kind of Wolverine-esque. And you see Knox talking to him on his wristband and saying, what's going on there? It looks like absolute carnage. Did your arm get chopped off? And you have the guy saying, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. But it looks really bad here. You know, your buddy Reaper must have let all the criminals out of jail. You know, there's some sort of mind control thing going on. It's really bad. And he keeps calling him Bud. So clearly he's a knock on Wolverine, yep. right? And so you're seeing that there's been a big jailbreak. You have the Red Reaper who is enacting his master plan that's going to usher in some sort of horrible fate for the city and stuff like that. So you're starting to get inklings that maybe whatever the Red Reaper did is what opened up the dimension to these creatures that have now destroyed the world, right? And so you have Knox who has now made his way up to the ship. And before Red Reaper can really get into his monologue about what he's doing, the two of them start fighting. And as they start fighting, you now flash back to the apocalypse where you have Reaper who is telling Knox that he needs to kill this thing. He's found a weapon on the drone that they can use to kill this thing. And they end up finally taking down this monster. And you have Reaper saying to him, what did you hesitate for? And Knox is saying, well, I don't kill people. And Reaper's like, what are you talking about? You're still holding on to this nonsense that you held yourself to back when the world still existed. And we're here now in the apocalypse, and you've got this code that you have to follow. And they get into basically a fight where you have Knox basically saying, yes, that's what I'm doing. So watch your language, and I'm not killing anybody, and these are the rules that I live by and all this kind of stuff. And so what the book starts to become is the fact that that starts slowly breaking down for Knox. You know, these rules that he's held himself to and this code and this integrity that he thinks that he has, they're in the apocalypse now, and that can't last forever because they're not going to survive if he refuses to kill things and if he does all this kind of stuff. And so So they're kind of knocking each other around back and forth, and they realize that they have to find out where this technology is coming from, and they have to find the base of these things. And they're making their way through this city, and they see a situation where another one of these horrific monsters that has come through from this other sort of place is feeding on the remains of a child. And so you have Reaper who's saying, okay, well, so now how does your I don't kill people thing hold up? What do you think about that? He's like, the thing's eating a child. Are you still worried about not taking another life or something like that? And so he ends up kind of pushing Knox to the point where he ends up firing at this thing and killing it. And when he does that, he kind of likes it. And so you're seeing that you have the fact that these two have to work together, but you still have the Red Reaper who is trying to push the buttons of his arch nemesis. You know, he's trying to basically show Knox that they're not so different after all. And so Knox ends up killing this thing. And when he does, you see that a bunch more are coming after them and things are about to really get crazy. And that's how the first issue of this ends. But it right in the first issue of this book, you get some fantastic artwork, some fantastic creature design, but you get this story of the fact that these two people who hate each other have to band together, and those old rivalries die hard even in the apocalypse. Mm. And so even though Reaper knows that he needs Nox to survive, if he can break him down a little bit and he could show him he's not as great as he thinks that he is, and he's not superior to him, he's going to do that. Mm. And I can tell you that in the ensuing issues, things get progressively worse for both of them as time goes on. So Extermination, a great series. I think that you can pick it up on Comixology now. And I don't know if Boom still has it in print on their website, but you can definitely get it on Comixology. And I want to say the first couple issues, if you are a unlimited subscriber, the first few issues you can read for free with your subscription. So it's definitely worth checking out simply because I think it's a great twist on both the post-apocalyptic stuff and also the arch nemesis sort of thing. Really, really good stuff, though. So there you go. That is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.